Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
It's a Tuesday edition here on Zero Block 30, and today we have six rounds in the magazine. Round number one. Labor Day's coming up. It's usually an end-of-summer bash, but holidays don't feel like holidays. In this 2020, we're going to dig deep and describe our perfect holiday weekend. Round number two, fuck Russia. Round number three, Ronald Rosser, who is a Medal of Honor recipient from the Korean War, died this week at the age of 90. If you haven't heard his story, buckle up. It's like a war movie come to life, and this dude is, he's essentially what the character from Gran Torino is, I would imagine.
Yeah, like that's a perfect embodiment. Yep.
Like, he was old, probably sitting on his little porch in a house that was no more than 1,200 square feet, where he had perfectly manicured lawn, and his paint was always perfect, and he wanted to tell you about the times that he killed thousands of people, legitimately. An insane story in round number three. Round number four, President Bush was respected around the world. No, it's true. Seriously. In this round, we're going to tell you why W was beloved by world leaders. Round number five, I have a Diddy question for you, Kate. All right. So your drill instructors are standing there. You're in your squad bay, and we're going over facts. Do you remember when we used to do that?
Yes.
And explain to people who never been to Marine Corps boot camp what that process is like.
You want me to do it right now?
Yeah.
The whole process of what boot camp is?
No, just if you're going to do a Diddy, like what's a Diddy? Like if you're doing knowledge Diddy,
oh,
what does that mean?
You say you're waiting for something. They make you scream knowledge over and over and over. Mm-hmm. Anytime there's like a still moment, you have to scream knowledge, which of course, like, I don't remember any of it.
For example, you will remember this. I know you, there's one that I know for a fact, you know. So if I screamed out and I'm your drill instructor and I say first female Marine, what's your answer?
Oh, for Mae Johnson. And then there's all supposed right. to be a date there, but I don't remember that. Now, also, house to house, Way City.
Mm-hmm. So you have those. And it's 1912 is Ophir Mae Johnson.
Thank you.
So, 1918.
Wow.
1918, wow. Fuck me. So here's the next one. The only Marine to be awarded two Medals of Honor.
Oh, I love his wife, the whole story, everything. John Vassallon.
No. The answer is Smedley
Dale
Butler.
Dale Smedley Butler.
Yeah, so Smedley Butler. There has recently been an unearthed speech that Smedley Butler gave to the Bonus Army. What, Kyle?
Dan Daly got two Medal of Honors also.
Yeah, it's Dan Daly
oh,
and
yeah,
Smedley
Dan Daly Butler.
Dan Daly, Smedley Butler.
Oh, my yeah. God.
So Dan Daly and Smedley Butler.
Were any of you actually Marines?
At the time. No. At the time. That was the trivia. At the time, he was the only Marine that had two. Medal of Honors. So whenever, and it was pretty unprecedented. They asked him if he wanted to retire when he got a second, that he had done enough for his country, and he said no, and he went on to become a major general. And he gave this speech to the Bonus Army, who there was big time riots that happened whenever World War II was winding down, and Smedley Butler was there as well. They were trying to get these bonuses that they were promised if they stayed longer. There was housing that was tied to it, a bunch of shit. If you haven't heard about the Bonus Army in Washington, D.C., look it up. But he, Smedley Butler, gave a speech, and I had never heard his voice before, what he actually sounds like. And that's really the interesting part here, is that if you picture a Marine Major General with two Medal of Honors, he sounds exactly like you want to. And some of his politics, I think, there's a big overlap in what's happening today with Smedley Butler. So we're going to play that clip as well. Round number five.
Six.
That's round number six. Here we go. Round number six. There's a new hot patoots in town, and this recruit is a dead-eye dick. We're going to tell you about a recruit who was at Marine Corps boot camp and broke the all-time record for the highest marksmanship, which is pretty fucking impressive considering how long that bad boy's been open and how long they've been keeping score. Spoiler alert, he got a 248 out of a 250, which is insane. That is just fucking crazy to be able to shoot that well right at the beginning of your career. I wonder what his drill instructor said to him whenever he walked off the line and had the highest score. Because they always want to make it out like they're better than you. When you know that you've broken the record and you're a recruit, what the fuck else can they say? I mean, really, because as a junior Marine, the only thing that really is important is do you run fast and can you shoot? Like, those are the two things that really matter. And he nailed both of them. So what did they say to this kid? Mm-hmm. Probably not much. Mm. Probably not much. Probably I, sir, carry on recruit. Some shit like that. Open their fucking bitch-ass mouth when they talk to me. That's what I would do. And all of that today is going to be brought to you by our good friends at Honey. I'm just letting the folks know I think it's important to be forthright on the episode. For some reason, I've got an incredible case of dry mouth going on. Can you hear it in the mic how dry my mouth is?
Not really.
Okay, well, it's disgusting that's going on here. But it's brought to you by our friends at Honey. Listen up. We have an exciting opportunity for all of you because, let's face it, we shop online. I shop online all the time when I'm buying all these new tools, and Honey has made it so much easier because you're searching for coupons with just one click, and sometimes they even pop in and remind you. They'll be like, hey, you fucking dick, don't forget to save money by using Honey. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to use it. I'm going to use Honey, and I have used Honey, and I've saved a bunch of money. You can, too, because they support over 30,000 stores online, including our very own Barstool Sports Store, which you can get the ZBT Just Goofin' shirt right now. Go to BarstoolSports.com and get that. And you've heard it all correctly. Honey is teaming up with Barstool to provide you an exclusive discount code with all Viva merch, which is KFC Radio's brand as well. The Barstool Sports Store is filled with Viva attire that will help you feel comfy as we head into fall. There's tie-dye hoodies, classic tees, sweats, hats, loungewear to all keep you super cozy. If you want to access this discount, all you need to do to save 20% on select Barstool Viva merch, just go to honey.com/Viva. This is the only way to save on merchandise. Go to joinhoney.com/Viva. Install Honey if you haven't already. Then you're going to select your favorite Viva items for purchase, and you'll save 20%. It's that easy. Just go to joinhoney.com/Viva to save 20%. Let's get started with the show. Dry mouth like a motherfucker.
Oi.
And I had dry mouth too this weekend when I was doing stuff outside. I've really been enjoying my weekends lately. I had shitty weekends for the longest time because it's so hot. Let me tell you guys something before
we
go.
Tell us.
So I was hanging out in the stock tank with McCartney and my wife, and I went to show McCartney because I was using this app that I found with Cowboy Mike that shows you all different kind of trees. I have a green belt behind my house, so I was checking out all these different trees that are behind my house. One of them is a Brazilian bluewood. Wow, Brazilian bluewood. I had no idea. And so if you cut it open, it's legit blue wood on the inside. But it also has a blueberry type of fruit that grows on it. So I was showing McCartney that, and we go out there to pull off a little piece of fruit, and I ate some the other night. McCartney ate some yesterday, and I was standing out there in the direct sunlight after getting out of the stock tank pool. It legit felt like I was on the surface of the sun. It was like 112 real fill, and the stock tank did not care.
Yeah.
So now things are just better.
Takes away the heat. Just glad that we're not in anymore and training in Texas right now. That has to be absolute nightmare fuel to have to wake up and go out there and do all that stuff. But at least we've got big Labor Day weekend coming up this weekend. I know we're all looking forward to it. Do you guys have any big plans?
No.
I don't. You're going to the shore? I'm sure.
Well, I'm going to the shore. Actually, I might be attending a party on Saturday. Not at the shore. We'll see. Mm. We'll see how things shake out.
Con's not social distancing. Let that be entered into the log.
Mm. You know what? I mean, you know what? New Jersey, New Jersey just announced that restaurants are going to open back up at 25% capacity this week. So we're all moving in the right direction. This coronavirus thing, I think we're getting past it. I hope we're getting past it. But more importantly, this is probably the weirdest thing that feels that I'm feeling this week, and that is Army has their first game on Saturday, and it's still a weird thing because there's only a handful of schools that are still playing, and there's some games on Saturday, but certainly not the normal slate of games that you would expect from noon till midnight. So that's going to be a little bit of a different feeling because it is a home game, but I can't go.
Aww.
Why?
Because they can't let people in.
They're not the only people that are going to be in the stands are the cadets.
Yeah. Well, don't you have
that's going to be eerie.
Don't you have the old costume? Don't you have your little cadet costume still?
In fact, I do. I probably
you're going to need a haircut because that shit's unsat right now. You never
very much unsat. That would make me stand out very quickly in a hurry.
Don't you think maybe though, if you got a haircut, you could just sneak in. You could put on your
I would think so.
Cadet.
Yeah, probably.
Khan still
probably
clearly could. Looks like he's 19. No doubt about
exactly.
it.
Yeah, exactly. He's got easily a baby face. So
I could be a sophomore in a heartbeat.
I see. I would think that the big-time college football bubbas, you, Brandon Walker, Big Cat, Dave, I would think that this week, everybody who really loves football, you guys would be standing on the highest peak of the highest mountain in the world shouting nothing but social distancing this weekend because we're one Saturday away from college football and two away from NFL kicking off. And it seems like just please. Just do what you're supposed to do so coronavirus doesn't take over and have the NFL canceled. It's a strange feeling that watching, like, Marquise Morris was kicked out of the game yesterday for the Clippers. And usually when that happens in the playoffs, you'll have either an eruption from the home crowd if it's an away player or big-time boos when it's an important player that kicks out. There's no response in sports. Fans are a huge part of sports.
Yeah, it's
just
been
huge.
Weird watching golf over the weekend. And it's just so, I don't know. I feel like it makes it harder for them because they have to be so inside their heads when they're.
Yep.
Yeah, but.
Dustin Johnson hits like a 40-foot putt to send you to
that
the playoffs
absurd.
And there's no noise.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
Like between his putt and then John Rahm's putt, there should have, the earth should have moved. And it's just nothing.
And it would have if there was people there. Like, it essentially robbed them of that moment. It's insane. Go ahead, Kate.
Well, people think that golf tournaments are, like, hoity-toity. Like, I was intimidated by going to one of them because I'm, like, a ball of dirt. Well, my cousin, when I was in the Marine Corps, Torrey Pines, the golf tournament, was at Torrey Pines with, like, Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods. And this was, like, right after the Tiger Woods cheating scandal and everything. This was, like, his first big tournaments back, I guess. And my cousin from San Francisco, who's, like, pretty well off, was like, hey, come with me. I got a ticket. And so I get all, like, snazzed up and everything, and I'm nervous. You have to turn in your cell phone and everything before you go in. I got blackout drunk at that thing. It was like a party.
Another story with KP and blackout
drunk.
Sorry,
but it was like,
I am shocked.
I'm just saying, it was like a wild party, dude. These golf tournaments are, like, insane. It's like, hey, let's all get ripped, but in the most gorgeous setting on the planet. It was such a delight. There was, like, a guy with no teeth in front of me in a Hawaiian shirt, like, just chugging beers. I was like, what is this? Somebody tried to throw a hot dog at Tiger Woods and got kicked out. It was like, it was a ooh.
We don't accept that. That's officially rebuked on the ZBT podcast.
But
it makes sense that people are fucked up there because you're out there in the heat. And you're crushing beers at the same time, and you're doing a lot of walking. People don't realize how much walking you do when you're going to a golf tournament because you're like, oh, he's on six. Oh, he's on the 15th hole. Let me try to cruise over there real quick.
Oh,
if you don't post up and it's your first one, you get fucked real quick.
Plus, they have the hospitality tents, and if you're lucky enough to go into there with the open bar there. And, I mean, it's just – I'll just say, you know, people who like golf, they also like to drink. There is a very big culture around golf that includes
hand
drinking.
In hand.
Yeah, I got into the clubhouse afterwards and was sitting next to Vijay Singh crushing a beer. And then I almost
long
got
time
hit.
Stoolie Vijay
long
Singh.
Time, and I almost got hit by Phil Mickelson's white Maserati on the way out. So it was
and
a
probably
real,
his calves as well.
Hell of a day. Anyway.
Phil Mickelson's calves are unbelievably
beautiful.
Sexy. We're going to talk about a lot of sexy dudes, but that's mainly going to be in round number six. Let's address the elephant in the room. This episode is entitled and listed only my better judgment. And with the pleading of Kyle and Kate, I decided to allow Cons to come back onto the show.
Let me ask you guys a question very quickly. Because you sent that tweet out last night. You muted me on Twitter.
I did.
Which, you know, all right, I get it. What was the level of seriousness that you were just going to not have me on the episode today?
Zero. You've been on since the beginning.
I don't know, because he did text us privately behind your back, Con. So I think he was a
little
serious.
Well, what I wanted to do originally was I was going to have that. I wanted to do – something without Cons, where we had us and then bring in Cons where he didn't know what was going on. So that was the
initial
plan.
So for all I know,
plan.
That's actually already happened.
Could be.
It could be. You'll
and
have
for
to
people,
wait to see.
For people who don't live online and have no idea what the fuck we're talking about, which is probably going to mm-hmm. Cons has been very snobby, judging people's charcuterie
incredibly
boards.
Snobby.
Oh, you can't even say the word. That's the reason I do it.
So people now, he's become this guy where whenever someone makes a charcuterie board, they tag him in it, and they go, excuse me, can you rate our sharp board? And he's like, it's a 4.7. The meat's
all right,
curly enough.
First of all, if you go back and look at all of my scores, I don't think I've given a score less than a 5.
Just know he's
anybody.
Being a real loafer online to people trying to
no, that's
hard.
Not true. You gave a 0.1 to the Navy guy.
Yeah, well, guess what? You know, I'm not above pandering, and I'm not above being petty when it comes to that sort of thing. So that's the lowest score. I'm trying to cultivate a community of charcuterie lovers, and I'm not trying to be
Officer.
Dismissive. Yeah, well, you know, enlisted can like charcuterie too. We
no,
don't
we
discriminate.
Can.
Yeah, you can. Listen, I'm not trying to discriminate. I'm not trying to discourage anyone. And honestly, like, these scores, they don't really – what do they mean? They mean nothing. And people get so upset with me if they don't get a score that they think they deserve. Honestly, I'm not trying to make anyone feel bad about their charcuterie boards. It's really just a way to share the love of meat and cheese with the masses. If you look at my scores, just about everybody gets a 7 or higher.
So you don't have integrity.
Mm-hmm. No, I have plenty of integrity. I'm just very inclusive, and I don't like to be mean to people. Because also, they've put work and their hard-earned money. Because guess what? If you put together a charcuterie board, that's not cheap. Meats and cheeses, especially if you're getting them from a local establishment like I do, not at Costco, like Chaps
oh,
might
see,
lead
this
you
is,
to believe.
This is the integrity violation that I want to talk about.
No.
Your
no.
very first board that you put up in December of last year in 2009 was or 19 was the cheapest looking shit I've ever seen. It was like the adult version of a fucking Lunchable. I know exactly what meat that was. To act like you go to these local harvested places,
hey.
Outrageous. You had old-ass grapes that look like they're from Mm-mm. fucking Pick and Save in Palatka, Florida. You had classic cut-up American cheese, a brick of blue cheese,
yeah.
and
oh,
cheap-ass brie.
No, excuse me. I went to local delis here in Hoboken, and I received
not on that
my-
board.
Yes,
guaranteed.
I did.
And
yes,
you even
I did.
Admit it. I wish I had the patience or the desire to go back because you admitted it to me either on Twitter or not or on this show. You admitted that when I spotted the pepper meat, you knew exactly what I was talking about.
You know what, though? You can come at my board all day, but you know what? Bill Belichick, he never played in the NFL, and he's considered the greatest coach to ever get on an NFL field. Just because my board is not up to your standard doesn't mean I don't know what
oh,
I'm
no,
looking at.
Oh, no, it's not up to my standard. It's not up to your standard is what I'm saying. You have this delusion of grandeur when you can't even do it yourself.
I can absolutely do it myself, and I can coach up folks as much as they need it.
Mm-mm.
Yes,
disagree.
Indeed.
Well, this
indeed.
Is something that we'll never find. If you just said, hey, I love to go to a restaurant and eat it, but to act like that you are this guy that's going to these local Hoboken delis and going through
I'll
and
make, you know what? Next time I go.
Cultivating this board.
Next time I go, I'll make a video when I go
next
into these
time,
local establishments.
Fine. Now I think you will. I think you will go to the nice delis. You did not do it before and you judge those who don't
you know
now.
What's funny about all this right now? Is Chaps is getting just as angry as these folks who get angry at me when they don't like a score. He is personally offended.
Well, that's
for what
why
reason,
the people
I do
on the internet, they view me as the people's staff and CEO. That's what's going on. That's what's happening right now.
All right. Well,
I did not want
that.
This cross, but I will bear it.
I appreciate it. Listen, I don't mind.
All right, let's get into a little bit more positive talk instead of shitting down Khan's neck because he has a nasty haircut. Let's move on where we're going to talk about what we'd actually want to do if we had a perfect setup that we could go through this Labor Day weekend. Because Labor Day, would you say Labor Day is more dreaded or more appreciated because it's the end of the summer?
I feel like if you have a great life, it's dreaded.
Oh man,
but
that was fucking
what does
sad.
That mean? What does that
God.
Mean?
But I'm looking forward to it. I gotta tell you. So
wait, why?
She
I
says
don't get
with
that
tears
point.
In her
Hear
eyes,
me
like
out.
Mattis.
If you are some kid who gets to spend their whole summer down the shore, or you're some fancy pants rich person who has the you're down the shore all summer long, and then Labor Day is kind of the end of the big party. Aw, dang. But if you've been cooped up in a studio in Queens all summer, you're like, fuck it, whatever. It's another weekend, man. Sweet. So it's, you know, I'm personally really looking forward to it.
Well, I do think that there's a great point there. It changes with age. When you're a kid, so for me, growing up in New Jersey, we didn't go back to school till after Labor Day. So Labor Day very much signified, okay, time's up.
Party's
time to
over.
Go back to school. Party's
out
over.
Of the
no
pool.
More shore. No more pools.
Right.
No more sleep
no
until
more
whenever.
No more green hair.
Mm-hmm. No more green hair, yeah. Get your things together, get your backpack ready, and school is back. But now, and as an adult, it's a little different for me, especially because Labor Day also signifies the start of college football, so I go from one good thing to the next. And also, by the time we get to Labor Day, for me personally, I get a little tired of the warm weather. As much as I enjoy doing things in the warm
sweaty,
weather.
Sweaty, sweaty, disgusting football.
Hey, hand up, indeed I am. So I need the cooler temps. Mm-hmm. It really does make a difference.
Right. All right.
Kate, did you ever decide what you were going to do for your Labor Day plans? Are you going to go up to New Hampshire like you had thought?
No, I actually got invited to Long Island to a little house out kind of near the Sound. So I'm going to do that instead. So change of plans. Going to be with some buddies. Just a small group. Got at the house has a swimming pool. And
is it the bocce ball friends?
It is not the bocce ball friends, but it's actually some people from work. So group from work, got a tiny little house near the Sound. And it's like a little couples thing.
So I don't know. I think there's going to be some listeners that are a little disappointed to hear that you're going on a couples weekend.
Oh, me, Liz Gonzalez, and her dog are going to be hanging out a lot. no, it's not, that'll get rumors going too. No, that's
oh
not
yeah,
the,
big time.
No, it's just a small group. But I saw the swimming pool and I was like, I'm fucking in. I'm in. Mm-hmm. I just haven't had any pool time like all summer.
Tube. I'm offended by that, Kate, because I think I can count at least three separate times where I invited you down the shore.
I feel like it's a pity invite. I feel like it's when the officer is like, well, we'll have the young troops over.
Hey, if you're in trouble, you're in a bind at a bar, call me up.
I'll come get you. If you don't have any...
Or I'll let you sit in that jail cell and I'll bail you out the next day.
I just know I'd be the one to go over there and... then I would probably end up accidentally having too many beers. And then like 4 days later, your parents would be like, is she leaving? Like, is she leaving anytime soon? So I'm like, you know, but you're right. I need to get early fall too is my favorite. Cause the shore is like empty, but the beach days and the water is perfect. So yeah. I'll probably be hitting up the shore more now.
I will say the one time Labor Day really, really hit me hard was the summer I was transitioning out of active service into the reserves. And I had spent the entire summer living three houses from the beach, collecting my paycheck every 2 weeks on terminal leave. And then Labor Day hit and it was a gut punch because that meant, okay, one, you're actually officially out of active duty now. So you're no longer going to get a check. So I guess start living off your savings.
Yeah.
Two, go figure out your place in the real world. And the party was most certainly over at that point. That was the last time in my life I had really zero responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Were you so is that active reserves where you actually have to go in?
No, so I was, it's called IRR, Inactive Ready Reserve.
Yeah, we do the same thing. If you have an eight-year obligation, you do five on or four on or whatever, and you got to finish it out. But you guys have five-year obligation, right?
Correct, five and then three in Inactive Ready Reserve. And there would have had to been a doomsday scenario that I would have gotten called back to active duty.
See, I wish you would have actually done Active Reserve, so then we would have something to have like a reference point, but... I see you weren't that committed to the cause.
You're right. I didn't have that forward thinking back in 2011 to know that in 2016 there's going to be this Marine staff sergeant who comes along on this thing, this newfangled thing called the internet with podcasts, and I was going to need reference points for stories to be told about the reserves. My bad.
Yeah.
Chaps, what's your perfect Labor Day weekend?
Yeah. I'm going to build a pergola, I think.
Whoa,
this
fancy
nice.
Boy.
I've been doing...
What's a pergola, chaps, for those who don't know? Because I don't think that's something that's very commonly known.
Like a canopy awning, I guess, it goes over a porch outside that produces a little bit of shade. I am doing that because right now we have like an academy tent over the area that I want to do, and it just looks like trash. We've spent so much money on the backyard and tools and building things, and then we have this one little 10 by 12 area that looks like absolute shit. So I'm going to change that this weekend. Try to anyway. It's the first thing that I'll be doing that's up on the roof, which I'm not thrilled about being up on the roof when it's 100 plus. That's going to be terrible.
Yeah.
But it'll be nice to have that done. I'm looking forward to it. What I'm not looking forward to is more stories about like what we're going to talk about in round number two, which is surely to come along. Because there is big time news around the world. And this story, I think that it's a lot of times, you know, whenever you hear a story of an NFL player getting in trouble or an MLB player getting in trouble for any type of violent action, when you read the article, it doesn't do the same justice as seeing it. When you can actually see what happens on tape, that changes your entire perspective on the situation. That's what happened here. You hear a story, a headline, four Marines are injured, but nobody's injured seriously. And it's not like they weren't in critical condition or anything like that. It's a story that you think like, damn, that really sucks. But you kind of move on pretty quickly. Whenever you see this story and you have a Twitter feed of these Russians in a convoy that are essentially surrounding Marines and causing them to be injured, that is a little bit different once you can actually see. Kate, why don't you explain what was actually happening in Syria?
Yeah, in the most violent skirmish in months between the U.S. and Russian forces in Syria, a vehicle collision in the eastern part of the war-torn country left American troops with concussions. One official said Russian vehicles sideswiped a light armored U.S. military vehicle, injuring four Americans. Two Russian helicopters flew above the Americans, and one of the aircraft was within 70 feet of the vehicle. Talk about butthole pucker factor. Mm-hmm. The National Security Council spokesman John Ulliott said in a statement that a Russian vehicle struck the American vehicle near Dayrek in northeast Syria. To de-escalate the situation, the coalition patrol departed the area. Unsafe and unprofessional actions like this represent a breach of deconfliction protocols committed to by the U.S. and Russia in December 2019, which Russia is obviously just taking dumpers all over and disregarding because they're
now,
assholes.
I think that this story and the way that that's phrased, imagine if this was if Barack Obama was still president of the United States and you see a Russian convoy smash into American troops, injuring Marines, and they say that they departed the area so things wouldn't continue to escalate. I do not think that it would be phrased in that way. Do you guys?
Wait, explain that a little further, because I don't fully understand your point.
Whenever you had the Iranians, whenever they went up to the American ship and they boarded the American ship, and everyone acted like that was a sense of like almost treason that Barack Obama didn't immediately bomb Iran, for example. And now like this is a little bit different. Like you're involved. We've talked about story after story after story this year of not only having this type of thing happen, but also Russians coming into our airspace. That's been happening a shit ton where they're just off the coast of Virginia. Just last week or 2 weeks ago, there was a Russian submarine off of the coast of Alaska that was in our portion of international waters. It was in our territory. Now you had a B-52 that was flying last week, and there's two Russian jets that got within 100 yards of it there. Over and over and over again, it seems like Russia is antagonizing. The stories of the bounties came out, that Iran and Russia teamed up to offer bounties on American troops in Afghanistan. We're seeing these stories over and over and over. No response from Esper, no official real response from Millie, and no response from the president of the United States. Tammy Duckworth, who everybody knows I'm a big fan of, she has every single day been putting out tweets reminding folks it's been 61 days since the Russian story broke about bounties and still no response from the executive branch. I just think that this type of thing is happening too much. Eventually, with Russia getting involved with our election processes that every single major intelligence agency has confirmed, not just ours, but around the world, and then this type of stuff, eventually we have to be like, Russia, enough is a fuck enough, man.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody smarter out there who's been tracking this stuff way more closely, but I don't know. It's like that little gif where that guy's just poking the thing with a stick and it's like, do something. Like, Russia just keeps poking us and I don't – I mean, I don't know what the, but it's in, it's and all what around do
you
the world.
Like, it's a, yeah. Obviously, we're going to get to Smedley Butler a little bit later, where he talked, his major piece of literature after he left the Marine Corps was War is a Racket. And I do kind of believe that. Like, I'm very firmly, we should take every single diplomatic approach that we possibly can before armed conflict comes into place. But when you're injuring actual troops and you're doing all these things and you're clearly being antagonistic, what options do you really have on the table? You can't sanction somebody like Russia seriously right now because all the other major players in the world wouldn't do it with us.
Yeah, I understand now what you're saying. I think it's just very, very difficult in today's day and age, and even the previous presidencies, not just President Obama, but President Bush as well. I think sometimes people think of the United States as the big boy on the block, and if anyone tries to antagonize us, to steal your word, then we should just automatically revert to a show of force and to do something. And as much as I think that would be a response that would be warranted, especially in this situation, I just don't know that it's that easy sometimes. But I will say, with the amount of examples now that Russia has shown, I would like to see some response. The fact that it's just, we keep seeing stories about Russia, about Russia, about Russia. And when you consider the intelligence that has been brought to light about the 2016 election, it just seems like there's something else going on there, and then we're just not privy to it. And I don't know that we ever will be privy to it.
Yeah, and it's not just the 2016, like the 2018 as well. I think that it's still happening, and it's currently happening. They have evidence now that Russia has like these bot farms, not actual farmers, but they have bot farms that are making like both sides of what's going on in Portland, that they, oh, we need to have some violence here, we need to go and do this thing and that thing. They're involved in so much shit. I think the major difference is when somebody like a Russia or China does it, the economic impact on both countries is significant. It's not like whenever we have an embargo in Cuba or an embargo against Iran. These are major economic players in the world, like with gas and so many other things, trade in China. But you have to find some kind of common ground, and that's why having a good relationship with your allies is very, very important.
I'm just glad for diplomacy's sake, because the MRAP that they were pretty much bullying from the sides with vehicles, and they had the helicopters or whatever over above Russia's, and you know, these the concussions and everything. I'm just glad that the driver of our MRAP wasn't from New York City. Because I feel like they wouldn't have been like, all right, we'll
get out of here.
They would have been like, all right, motherfuckers, let's fucking go.
Lock and load.
Yeah, I feel like it would have been a whole different ball of wax.
The way that you're trained, you're not trained to essentially retreat. Like, that's not how you're trained. You want to, if you have people that are going against you and that, one, the fear that would be inside your body as helicopters loom overhead would be unbelievable.
Yeah,
we often talk about we didn't have that in our wars. Afghanistan, you didn't, Kate. We didn't have it in Iraq, where they had legit overhead air power against us.
Oh yeah, nothing.
That changes
nothing.
Everything.
And so I wonder too, how quickly does the ROE, the rules of engagement, get escalated when you got this sort of situation happening right in front of you? At what point do you have to just start retaliating on the spot? I don't know what their ROE is here, so I can't speak to it. But my other question: have either or any of you ever had a concussion?
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
okay. Mm-hmm. Just curious. Concussion's not fun.
Yeah,
that was my question.
Mine was from rugby, not from the military. Sledded down the steps of the rugby house on a keg.
You find bombs eventually. Some of them blow up.
different vibes.
Any other last words on that, or can we move on?
Can move on.
Let's move on to round number three, about another gentleman who most likely had fear going through his body as well. Round number three is, it came to us from military.com, and they say that Medal of Honor recipient Ronald Rozier, who died Wednesday in Bumpus Hills, Tennessee at the age of 90, had a colorful way of talking about the brutal combat that he saw in the Korean War.
I was a forward observer, and I was attached to 11th Company of the 38th Infantry, and their mission was a company-sized raid on this Chinese mountain. It was a huge mountain outpost out there, and they had about a battalion of Chinese up there. It was 20 below zero at the time, and about a foot of crusty snow. We sent one platoon up the front of the mountain as a diversion, and the rest of the men there went around to the back of the mountain, which was a good half mile away. We had to fight our way through bunkers, trenches, lines all the way up. And by the time we got up to what we would call a salting position, we were down to about 35 men. All the officers were down. The company commander was hit in the face. We were in a really bad situation. So I got on my radio and I drugged my radio up to the company commander. His whole face was frozen blood. I was surprised he could even talk. And the colonel told him to reorganize and make one final attempt to take the mountain. And company commander said, "Yes, sir." Looked up and he got this very hopeless look on his face. And I said, "Well, I'll take it before you, Captain." And he said, "How you gonna do it?" I said, "I'm going straight ahead shooting, Captain. I'll take you men with me." So we jumped up, started shooting, and went straight into him. I got about 2 feet from the Chinese. The only thing that separated us was the dirt from their trench. I was on one side of it, and they was on the other. And I stopped and looked back, and I was by myself. All these other guys had been cut down behind me. And there I was. I went to all this trouble to get to Corey and get up on the front line, and here I could shake hands with them. And I said, "Well, Ron Rosser, you went to a lot of trouble to get here. Let's give it a go." I let out a war whoop like a wild Apache Indian and jumped in the trench with them. Close combat never bothered me like it did a lot of people. It always seemed like the enemy was a lot slower than me. They looked like they were in slow motion, and I was always on top of them. I fought my way over to a big old bunker, a machine gun bunker, and I'd done flanked the thing so he couldn't shoot me. And I had one White Foster's hand grenade, so I crawled up on top of the bunker, and I kicked the spoon and rolled it in the back door. I got back on top of the bunker, and I was going to try to hold that area so the troops could come up and help me. And I looked, and here come about 35 Chinese coming at me. I considered running, getting away from them, but I knew they'd just chase me down and shoot me. So I said, thought to myself, "Well, Ron Rosser, you're doing just great there going after him."
And if you listen to this show long enough, I think that you know how I feel about the Korean War. I think that it is one of, if not the most brutal wars that America has ever fought in. And the people that fought there don't get the attention that World War II veterans get, but they live through some extreme situation. Them in World War I don't get talked about nearly as enough. And this story will emphasize why. He said, speaking of Ronald Rozier, he said, "I actually beat 7 people to death with my rifle, 2 North Koreans and 5 Chinese fighting hand to hand. I've bayoneted a couple in my time," he told Stars and Stripes at a hotel.
That is absurd. Yeah. That's an absurd statement.
Yeah. I mean, and it goes on. He was talking before National Medal of Honor activities at Arlington National Cemetery on March 25th of 2015. He said that he was an Army corporal on January 12th, 1952, when his platoon was ordered to capture a hill on the outskirts of Pongali, Korea, according to a Congressional Medal of Honor Society. The soldier, and first of all, getting told that in real life, take the hill, no thanks.
No, we have no scope of experience to relate to that, because I was never told to take a hill.
Yeah, did that happen in Afghanistan where they were like, "You got to take the peak"? Did that ever go down?
I think in like the Battle of Marja, and I'm sure in some of the more mountainous regions, I know there was some really, I never obviously experienced it, but I'm sure there was some moments where it was kind of similar.
Like,
but
the Medal of Honor recipient from the Air Force, Chapman, that was on a mountain where they were looking down, and he had to actually go up the mountain and scale, and you could see that video, which is unreal. Like, I think that's another story. You read the video, like, "Oh, he's going up a mountain." Yeah, I understand that a little bit. You see it and see what he had to live through. It's a whole different ball of wax. So he was a corporal.
Read this next paragraph, because I think this really paints a good picture.
It says, "The young soldier led a charge up the slope through heavy enemy fire. Halfway up, he realized he was alone." Ha. But kept
That gives me chills. Right,
but kept going, destroying enemy positions as he advanced before exhausting his ammunition. And then the story goes on to say he reloaded by finding the weapons of the people that he had just killed and continued to bound up this mountain. And the things that he did was absolutely insane. And hearing it from their actual first person, if you have a chance, Google it and listen to him talk about it. He just goes through it methodically. And I think that that's one thing about Medal of Honor recipients that I've noticed. being fortunate enough to interview several at this point from multiple different conflicts, they tell this story because they're part of the Medal of Honor Society so much. When I talked to Mr. Williams, Woody Williams, offline, he said, son, there probably hasn't been a three-day break in my entire adult life since I was on EWO that I haven't told the story of what happened to EWO. So they just go through it, boom, 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 and it doesn't have the emotional impact because you're hearing them say it in a very almost academic-type way because they've said the story so many times. Hearing them and picturing what you're going through at the time he did it, he was 17 years old. Think about what you're doing when you're 17. Insane. And so then you have this guy who's done all these different things. His brother was killed in combat as well. Then after he gets out, he was part of the Medal of Honor Society, which they go and they speak in different places. He had to go speak at schools. I've been watching Mindhunter recently, and one of my favorite scenes in Mindhunter is when Agent Ford, who is played by Jonathan Goff, who was also King George in Hamilton, and he was Kristoff in Frozen. So he is part of the behavioral science unit at the FBI when they're getting it going. And in the show, they're the ones who coined the phrase serial killer. Well, he goes to an elementary school to explain the process, and the principal there is telling him that he can't say words like deviant. Which makes sense whenever when you're talking to children. You don't want to scare them and have them feeling terrified. Imagine the feeling of the administration from a high school or a middle school or an elementary school when you have this guy's story that talked about he had to bound back and forth in the middle of the night while he was cutting people's throats open and they weren't making a sound. He became so proficient at slitting their throats that there was no sound that came out.
Yeah. That's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. And I think it's important to note that when you go through any branch of the military, you're taught hand-to-hand combat, pretty basic stuff, though. You're not by any means a trained killer with your hands the way some people would like you to believe.
I've seen Kate flare that heel. I've seen her do it.
It's true.
But and then also I think in more recent conflicts, it's very rare that you would find yourself in a hand-to-hand combat situation. So for him to say, I killed 7 people fighting hand to hand with the buttstock of my rifle. I'm sorry, I can't really put any thought to that because I have nothing that even comes close.
Yeah, there's no frame to of what reference that, for that gentleman did.
The nice thing is, I'm sure he wasn't sitting in front of elementary school kids like, and then I ripped their throats out. But he liked speaking to them about the choices they make in life, honor, and selfless service. That was like one of his favorite things. So I'm sure he had different versions of it. Because
he
did that.
He
really
spoke
to
children for decades. Yeah. So he wouldn't be invited back if that was the case.
Yeah. But really impressive guy. Really impressive story. And definitely look him up for sure. It's pretty crazy.
It's a phenomenal story for sure. And one of the many that are pretty prevalent here for the American military veteran. The next story in round number 4 is President Bush. I love President Bush now that he's a painter. Now that he's doing painting all over the place, doing watercolors, I love the little stories that come out. Kate, you actually found this story. What happened with old W?
There may be some out there who say his presidency was not marked by diplomacy at all, but if you talk to former Bush family cook Matthew Wendell, he'll give you a different perspective. Wendell did not cook for the Bush family in the White House. That was handled by the White House chefs, but when the president and his family visited or brought world leaders to Camp David or Prairie Chapel Ranch, it was his cheeseburgers that the Bush family loved the most to serve. And they served them up to German Chancellor Angela Merkel, Saudi Arabian Ambassador Prince Bandar bin Sultan, and Mexican President Vicente Fox. Though he cooked for the Bushes at many important occasions, he would never call himself a chef. He just did a book for the White House Historical Association. Chefs are classically trained. Wendell just makes food that people like to eat. So there's this book out now called Recipes from the President's Ranch, Food People Like to Eat. And it has like all these great classics. They're easy to make, like his Sunday night stacked cheese enchiladas, a Bush family favorite. Before, he was cooking up golf shrimp for President Fox or teaching Chancellor Merkel how a Texas barbecue pit works. He was just a regular caterer from the heart of Midland, Texas. The Bush family loved his work so much, which he did for the Bushes in the 1995 gubernatorial campaign events in Texas, they asked him to work for them. And that right there, do what you love and do it to the best of your ability, and you never know where the hell that's going to take you. You think, oh, I'm just a chef working hard. I fucking love barbecuing and all that shit. look what he ended up doing with his life. It's awesome. He was with.
I would love to see video of him explaining a Texas barbecue pit that's probably like an offset barbecue to Angela
Merkel. Right, to German Chancellor Angela Merkel. He was with the family through the 2000 election and declined to work at the White House itself. Food people like to eat is taken from how former First Lady Laura Bush's mother described Wendell's cooking. So she was just like, food people like to eat, man. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. all you really want. And I honestly, I'm trying to learn how to cook. This sounds right up my alley. In 2007, President Bush hosted Queen Elizabeth II for a formal state dinner with a menu that included spring pea soup with American caviar, Dover sole a la Almondine, saddle of spring lamb, and chantilly sauce arugula salad, blah, 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 blah. This is not how the menu for Matthew Wendell at the Prairie's Chapel Ranch went. They were more likely to serve up spicy mashed potatoes, green chili mac, cheese, and Maddie's fried chicken.
Had more of a Babadook kind of vibe.
A recipe received from his mother and served to French President Nicolas Sarkozy. So you're thinking the President of France is coming. We better get a...
What is this? This is macaroni and cheese casserole.
We better get a fancy Captain Con's charcuterie board. And instead, they roll out the diplomatic cheeseburger.
These are beany weenies.
Yeah, the little beany weenies for everybody. Wendell's cheeseburger was at the first official meeting between President Bush and former UK Prime Minister Gordon Brown at Camp David in July 2007. So it will probably work for your home functions as well. So yeah, this is, of course, George W., the big cookbook.
It's the French one that really impresses me. Like, they give it to the French. The English guy, the Brits can't cook for shit. So who cares what you give them? You can give them a bowl of Cheerios and they'd be thrilled.
Right. The first thing I always think these days when I see anything about President Bush is, gosh, he's so cute. He really is. He's just a cute old man. And I think oftentimes when people think of presidents, and especially during their presidency, they look at them through the lens of Republican or Democrat and very political, and they forget about who they are as a person. And I think what President Bush has done so well since leaving the White House
is make people feel conflicted about the war and the horrors that it caused because he's cute as a button. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, yeah, but he showcases
right.
He showcases just what a
nice
person he is.
But he loved cheesy enchiladas, man.
Yeah, we did a lot of shelling of folks, but he also loved good eating. I think what's unbelievable about the Bush family is that they come across as just like your regular down-home family in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And to have their background, I mean, H.W. was president. So he obviously was a high-level government player for a long time before that, the most like skilled probably resume maybe in American history is what H.W. did. And then you have W, that goes by W, pronounced W, that was a part owner of the Texas Rangers, who's a great athlete in his own right, still could go out and run and do all these different things, possibly committed some more, a little light war crime goofing in certain areas, like with the waterboarding and all that shit. And now he's painting. And then whenever you have presidents that leave the office, they hated each other in the news, and now they're all pals, like Bill and George hanging out together. You have all these different presidents that are like hanging out. It's like, is this a show? It feels almost like, what's that word that they kayfabe, is that it, from WWE, where a wrestler is always in character and they give that, it feels like that's what politicians
do.
They
all
just
have,
make you say
I think
shit.
They all have a really
it is kayfabe, yes.
I think they all have a really good PR person who's like,
or kayfob, sorry, kayfob.
Now you just need to get real old and cute, you start painting, you play your saxophone a little more, shrivel your back a little, people are gonna just really feel bad for you. I feel like,
and in Bill's case, being a creepy asshole and doing like sexual assault, that would be good.
Yeah, that also would really be good if you stopped hanging out with pedophiles and supporting them. But no, I think once you get away from politics and you no longer have to toe the party line, you can just be who you are naturally. And I think you see that, especially with the previous two presidents, with Obama and Bush. They just seem like really nice, down-to-earth people that I wouldn't mind sitting and having a beer with. And let me also say, people will often ask, who's your dream guest? We've been very fortunate to have many, many cool and accomplished guests. George W. Bush would be my number one. I would love to sit down with him and have a conversation.
Well, John Boehner texted him once when we were with him.
Wait, Maybe he seems like he'd be cool if we did a sleepover. And I think if we did a sleepover, he'd be like, all right, guys, come on. We're doing Sundays in the kitchen.
He for sure. Would do
and then
Sundays.
We're
going to
do paints.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to get the book and I'm going to try and start making some of this shit. Beanie Weenies, let's go.
Yep, I completely agree. All right, let's move on. We'll move past President Bush, just like the country did in 2012 or 2000. What year was
Who
it?
Who knows?
16.
No, 16.
Eight.
Yeah, speaking of Bush, my neighborhood waxing salon is open again. House of Wax.
It's going to be a good Labor Day, I guess. All right, next up, Smedley Butler, who has an unbelievable middle name as well. Middle name of Darlington. Right? How fancy is that? You hear the name Smedley Darlington Butler.
So good.
That is a fancy
Beautiful.
Name.
That's a guy who does charcuterie boards on the regular.
Oh, yeah. I doubt it. But he, Medal of Honor recipient twice. I wanted you to hear this speech because it's one that I hadn't heard. It's from the Bonus Army in Washington, D.C. We're going to pump it in now. I think we're the first podcast ever to have Smedley Butler as a guest. Mm. Mr. Butler, take it away.
During the last 3 months of traveling, I've gained the impression that Mr. Roosevelt's popularity is on the wane, but that it is not slipping fast enough to, of itself, destroy his chances for re-election in 1936. The great mass of open-minded Americans who are not blindly bound by party allegiances and whose votes really decide elections, again, have come to the conclusion that the Democratic Party cannot run this country. But they do not seem to have any more confidence in the old line Republican politician. Mr. Roosevelt will be reelected unless he makes some false step, involves us in a foreign war which is surely coming. Just remember, too, that this administration has control of the vote-getting machinery and has control of $5 billion to spend as it sees fit. And as present-day politics go, you could elect an Eskimo with $5 billion.
Isn't it strange when you hear a voice, like you see pictures, and I think I've seen more pictures than most of, well, I guess unless you went to Okinawa, because the base is there, Base Butler, like it's Smedley D. Butler Base is like what it's called, Camp Butler. And so whenever you're there, there's pictures of him in almost every single building giving little facts about his life, some of the things that he did. I would have never thought that his voice sounded like it did. So raspy. It almost sounds like, what's that kid from Little Rascals? Like he had
Froggy.
Grown up.
Froggy?
Froggy. Yeah, it's like Froggy grew up, which would be a perfect name because Smedley Butler could definitely grab an old fucking carbine and be like, you're feeling froggy, bitch, jump.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of nicknames, his nickname was Old Gimlet Eye.
That's
I don't know
up.
Where that came from.
I don't know
from,
what it means, but I like it.
That sounds like me with banana-induced
yeah,
pink
old
eye.
Old banana
or something.
Eyes.
He gave some butthole mm-hmm. eyes.
Right.
That's really
well,
it.
Well, a gimlet is a cocktail. So I just, maybe he was like constantly looked like he was slightly drunk. I don't know.
He'd been through some shit. Wouldn't be surprising.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't fault him for it either.
Mm-mm. His take, have you ever read anything that he's ever done, like War is a Racket? Like what he actually believed after he, because he actually ran for president when he got out of the Marine Corps. And one of his thing, because he had fought in so many different conflicts all around the world, is that he was tired of America already in the early 1900s, of America being involved in every single major conflict. So one of his major platforms was that the American military, like naval military, could not go more than, I believe it was 70 nautical miles outside of the continental United States without a very specific reason. And it had to be a unanimous support from both the House and the Senate. And he would ensure that that happened as he was president. 70 nautical miles is all you could do. He said, we need to get out of everybody else's fucking business.
Yeah, it was actually known as the mind your business platform, where he decided America should just always just mind our own business.
Which a lot of people say would be fucking awesome. That would be very, very cool.
Tell you what, man.
We can reduce
this
huge ass budget.
But then I feel like you become like a North Korea where you become really insular and you get real suspicious of everybody and you become real nuts.
Yeah, you got to have your military travel.
You got to attack somebody.
Get out and see the world.
You got to venture out and slap some folks around every now and again.
I would say once a decade, you get to pick a spot.
Yeah. Once a decade, you get to go pick a fight, do it for a few years, and then come back.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. That's a good platform.
I think that would be perfect. That's the kind of thing we do. But imagine if we did adopt that perspective. What would happen to the recruiters? You no longer be able to have the See the World tag put out.
This is true.
You could be like, see the Florida Keys. Mm-hmm. That could be the extent of it.
Yeah.
Exactly right. All right, let's move on to round number six. We're going to do a little rifle qual goofing. Kate, were you an expert?
I was, yes. Actually, rifle qual week was one of my favorite weeks in the Marine Corps. I know, oddly enough, even though I hate getting up early, once you really get in the zone, I grew up around guns and I enjoy shooting and mm-hmm. kind of always have. And once you're really into it, it's almost like a meditative, you're in the zone, you're doing your own thing. I think it's kind of like golf. You're only really in competition with yourself, and it's just like mm-hmm, a nice get-in-the-zone kind of thing. So I've always really enjoyed it. And
unless you're starting to do bad, it is. You're absolutely right. Like, it's like golf is an unbelievable analogy, because if you have expectations, like you're a golfer that's decent, and you have expectations to shoot low 80s, something like that, and then you go out and you absolutely rip one into the woods on the first hole, and it's out mm-hmm. of bounds, and you're starting at four for your next stroke. You're like, not going to be a great day. Same thing on the rifle range. If you pull a couple shots from the 200, your butthole is puckered for the rest of the time.
Yeah, and if you miss one, I mean, it really is it's as much mental as it is, you know, watching your breath and controlling your finger and blah, blah, blah. But so... for those who don't, and boot camp, half of you, like, I had been around guns, I knew how to handle them, but most people had never touched one before, and all they knew,
I'd say at least 80%,
and the moment they get it in their hands, it's a very scary thing for some people. They they've only seen it in movies, and so to actually hold one in their hands, it's like a big deal. So they kind of ease you into it. First you start with the basics of it, breaking it down, cleaning it, drill, blah blah blah. And then finally you get to snap-in week, which for an entire week, you and your fellow recruits sit around staring at a barrel. And you literally are in...
taking classes over and over and over again.
Just endless amount of classes on how to adjust your sights, how to sit in the prone, the kneeling, the sitting, the standing, and all this stuff. They basically, they break it down Barney style and then shove it down your throat for an entire week. And then finally you go to the range... and you finally start firing. We had a gal poop her pants in the prone on the range. Ah. So that was a special moment. Anyways.
That's, she got a letter of appreciation.
Absolutely.
For that.
Yeah. It was a whole thing.
That's commitment.
But
you pooped your pants.
But it's a ton. There's coaches there. There's a ton of people firing all at once. The other Marines, half of you are down in the pits pulling, and you put these giant polka dots in and you put it up again. It's almost like lifting a garage door, and you can see where you're hitting and adjust and blah, blah, blah. So it's a stressful time. And a lot of people really fuck it up their first time, especially in boot camp. They're just too nervous. They're
And it's, I think in that element, you have, you know, when you know something really well, like cons, you know, artillery, you know, football, you know, that kind of stuff. Kate, you know, cat life. You're big into it with sport. You know exactly what you're talking about. If you have these different terminologies and physical security, and I don't mean to diminish your expertise in that area.
High curbs.
right. So you have those things. And whenever you explain it to somebody and you know exactly what you're talking about, and because you've been doing it for years, it's so obvious. When you're explaining to someone how to shoot, and they don't know those terms, it makes zero sense. When you say you have to focus on the front sight tip with the blurry target in the background, you have people have no idea if they've never handled a weapon before what that means. Control your breath. Don't jerk the trigger. What the fuck are you talking about?
So it's
it might as well be gibberish. Honestly, it really is very difficult because if you've never shot a weapon or done anything, you just have no frame. We've talked about frame of reference this episode. You have no other frame of reference, so you're like, I don't know what you're even saying.
Even if you have, then they tell a lot of us. They're like, if you have shot before, forget everything you knew, because a lot of you were taught wrong, and so now that's in your head. So it's especially impressive when PFC Austin Farrell transitioned from a recruit to a Marine. His senior drill instructor gave him one simple piece of advice. Stay humble, Staff Sergeant Joshua Gerd told Farrell as he handed him the EGA, the sign that he was finally a Marine after 3 months of recruit training. Remaining humble after the Marine Corps boot camp is a challenge for any new Marine. I know. I wanted to karate everyone I saw. I was ready to karate.
Come here. Let me show you. I'll check you out. See my tan belt? Just tap when you're going out. Yeah, just tap.
Hey, Mom, check out this hip toss. Anyways. But for Farrell, who was declared the, and I quote, deadliest recruit on Paris Island, when he beat the rifle range record, the challenge might be even greater. The new Marine scored a 248 out of a possible 250 on Table 1 of the Marine Corps Rifle Qual and followed it up with a perfect 100 on Table 2, earning him the recruit record at Paris Island, South Carolina, under the modern scoring system. Table 2, which consists of close-range fire at multiple targets and moving targets, was added in 2005.
That sounds a lot more high speed than Table 2 actually is. Like, you're just basically walking with a target. It's not that high speed.
Yeah.
But it sounds super fancy.
And kind of, and I think there's more to it. Sorry. Oh, here it is. The Marine breeze through in Table 1, you do 200. It's 200, 300, then 500, correct? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the Marine breeze through the 200-yard line, which requires Marines to shoot in the least stable standing position. Standing is so hard unless you have grip.
Standing's the hardest by far.
And they're always like, oh, the women have it easier because they can rest their arms on their tits. They can rest the rifle on their tits. Well,
not true. I've seen many a fat male Marines that could not do the same.
Exactly. So he breezed through the 200 yard lines and
Kate almost laughed at a fat shaming. Write it down.
Almost did, but I didn't. So this kid is ripping through and crushing it. I had the range NCO and a lot of coaches coming up to me and ripping the scorecard out of my hand. Out of the hand of the recruit keeping score. I was told by the recruits in the pits that they were doing my target, who were doing his target, that all the drill instructors were over there talking to make sure I wasn't cheating because they couldn't believe it either. So they keep going over there like, this kid's crushing it. Is this...
I imagine they're treating him like Charlie Bucket with a golden ticket. Like, let me see that range card.
Moving to the 300-yard line, Farrell was confident in his abilities and he said 100% sure he would break the range record. It was at this yard line in the sitting position where the Marine dropped his only 2 points, something that still haunts him. I'm honestly not sure what happened there. I thought they were good shots, but something was off.
I'm off this guy now. I'm off. All right.
Here's going to be an unpopular take.
Yeah.
I'm not impressed. Guess what? You know what? There have been so many people who are great in practice, great practice players. When it comes time for the bright lights, though, they don't show up. If this guy goes out and kills 248 out of 250 enemy combatants.
Well,
cool.
Don't listen to cons because this kid, he felt bad for missing his 2 points. And when he got to the squad bay later that day, his drill instructors made him pay for those 2 missed points with a bit of time on the quarterdeck. He got punished for missing those 2 shots. All right,
good.
Good, yeah. You nasty fucking thing.
It was
thing.
At the 500-yard line where he started to feel the pressure, knowing he had already lost 2 points, but he crushed it. And that is, from 500 yards, that it's such a good feeling when you hit from there.
I actually think that's the easiest yard line. For me, that was the easiest yard line. Because you're laying down. It's not moving. If you have good fundamentals, that motherfucker ain't going
nowhere.
If you
get into a rhythm. But that's the spot where if you miss one, you're like, oh, God, what
rhythm
the fuck?
Because
you miss one, you move one little inch, and you don't even hit the target. So that's the...
And not like golf, but that one is almost like basketball, where you have a hot hand where, like, J.R. Smith is hitting fucking everything. Steph is hitting anything. You have Damian Lillard from the logo. Yes! Like, you have that kind of feeling.
Well, so another reason on the actual qual day that the drill instructors were so skeptical of him, during the practice days leading up to it, he did poorly, and he said he wasn't trying to get a good score in those days. He was just doing everything he could to learn his rifle. So he was just kind of messing with it and fucking around. And then the second day, his score improved by 40 points the next day. So his scores were leaping by leaps and bounds because he had shot rifles before and he just wanted to get a feel for it. And then he crushed it on the last day.
Oh, now I hate this guy.
This guy is so full of baloney.
Oh, get
that.
And he's
super
handsome, too. Recruits are never handsome.
Oh, yeah. He's hot as shit. When Kate's at the article, I was like, I'd give this guy a jump. He is fucking unbelievable.
He's a handsome young
fella.
He's
graduating September 4th. He has big plans for his times in the Marine Corps. He signed an intel contract, wants to join special ops, and put his shooting skills to work as a Marine Corps sniper. I think he would probably be pretty damn great.
See, he's not doing any of that. He's going to be on the Marine Corps shooting team.
He looks like a hard...
Here's what I don't like.
You guys are so mean, you crusty old...
No. What do you mean? Well, I said he's going to be on the all-Marine Corps shooting team. That's not mean.
Yeah, but also like, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. How about you just finish recruit training there, champ? And then you can talk about going.
No, I disagree with that. I think that you have to have big expectations. If you are training a young Marine leader, that's exactly what you want. You want him to want to have these big expectations. You want a recruit to leave and say, one day I'm going to be a sergeant major of the Marine Corps.
Right. This kid, and plus he's like movie star handsome. And then there's a photo of him with his cover off. Huge brain area on this guy. Looks like he's got a normal face, and then his cover's off. This kid's got a brain on him. So I do think intel, but I do think like
he's gonna try to take over the world.
Marine Corps needs these people, man. They need these hard chargers that are sharpshooters. Also, you know, his coaches have such big dick energy right now. Like, you know, that was us. That was what I told him to do.
You're absolutely right. I bet his coaches get like a NAM because he shot so well.
Yeah, that was me. Mm-hmm. I told him to do that, so.
Yeah, he was fucking it up. You saw him on day one. He says that he was over there fucking with the rifle. No.
Coached
him
up.
I told him, I came over there. I was like, look, recruit, you got to have a little bit of positive mental attitude. That's what we need here. And once he got that PMA, he acted like he was fucking Peter Pan and think of his happy place. Boom. Everything was coming up gravy.
I do wish him well, though, in his career as a Marine.
Hey, bitter assholes.
Yeah, you bitter assholes. Let's move on to save rounds and alibis. Kate, we'll start with you. What do you got?
What do I got? Oh, I went on a little bike ride around my neighborhood yesterday. Mm-hmm. They had like a bicycle meetup. And so it was like me and like 45 to 50 other people. We all had our masks on, blah, blah, blah. We were outside. It was a breezy day. Somebody was like, oh, great, you organized a super spreader event. I was like, I don't know. I just showed up to one. I didn't organize it. Anyways, so it was lovely. Went all around my neighborhood. Ended up doing over 20 miles. Went to that big park in Queens where the U.S. Open tennis match is played. And the Men in Black, where those two saucers are. So I got to ride my...
World's Fair.
My bicycle around the World's Fair. People say New York is dead and are like, oh, it's horrible. It's such a goddamn delight. Like, everybody is being so fantastic lately, and everything is, yes, there's, like, little pockets of trouble, but it's a goddamn delight. So, I don't care that all the rich people are out in the Hamptons. I'm having a lovely time in the city right now.
Oh, shots fired at Dave. Kyle, what do you got?
Not a whole lot. Just want to get ahead of all the hardos that are going to say that the Marine had an ACOG and they shot iron sights like real war heroes.
That's an excellent point.
So just,
I didn't even think
about
that.
Yeah, just go ahead and shut the fuck up now. No one cares. So.
But he had an ACOG and what you did back in my day,
we used to roll our sleeves.
Now they're letting women do stuff and they got ACOGs.
exactly. So, and also, I just want to say that doing that in boot camp is huge because you know there's no pit love.
Right.
Everyone's so fucking scared of marking something a 4 when it's really a 3.
Yeah.
There's no pit love, but you get to the fleet.
There's no quarter inch long tear from the bullet hole.
Right. Yeah.
Kyle, tell them what pit love is.
So, pit love is like if a guy is having a rough day. Right.
Or lady.
Guy used in a general term.
Yeah.
I don't want to get canceled. So,
I guess Kyle doesn't think women shoot. Well,
women can do things now. I learned that from Ron Burgundy.
Yes, thank you.
But you're pulling the pits and you're scoring them, and that's the official scorecard. And, you know, say they maybe shoot a 2, but they could really use a 4. You just take that pen and you stab it in there and you put a shot spotter in it and you run it up as a 4.
Get that target high of the sky, 34.
It's the
get
same
that target
with
high
crunches
the sky.
During a PFT. If you're not cheating, you're not a friend.
Yeah. Everyone gets 100 and everyone qualifies on the range.
Right. Yes.
Chaps, were you ever a verifier as a staff NCO?
Yeah,
verifier.
That job fucking stinks.
Yeah, that's the
man.
Worst.
That's like the worst day. Yeah. You don't even have any real responsibilities. I didn't even smoke a lot, but I was fucking ripping cigs whenever I was a verifier.
Love smoking.
I was just sitting down there. My range take, I love a box nasty.
Me too.
Give me a box nasty
yeah,
at lunch.
I thought
they were great.
Worst feeling.
The only thing I didn't fuck with was the boiled egg. Get the boiled egg out of my
face. Oh, I even
like
the boiled
egg.
But
other than that.
But the worst feeling is walking back to the 300-yard line and seeing that the crows had gotten into them.
Goddamn crows.
This isn't good for my Captain Charcuterie brand, but I love all
Captain
that stuff too. The brand.
You have to be
the box lunches.
This is out of control.
Just call him Captain Shark.
Captain Shark.
Shark with a T.
All right, Con, what do you got?
Real quickly, so there was a picture of Luka Doncic, NBA player. He was drinking what appeared to be urine. So he's a fellow piss oatmeal guy. Respect. Mm-hmm. Something I'm really, really excited about. I was introduced last week in Hoboken. We have an American Legion. And I was unaware that we had an American Legion in Hoboken. And during Hurricane Sandy, it got the old location got destroyed. And when they rebuilt it, it was kind of run down or whatever. And it's kind of very much like we've talked about, these American Legions all over the country that are dingy and dirty. And they don't really seem very appealing to the younger generation of veterans. Well, there's, I don't know if he wants me to say his name, so I'm not going to yet. But there's a few gentlemen who have taken over the American Legion in Hoboken. They renovated it. It is an unbelievably very, very nice club now. Huge TVs. The bar is unbelievable. They're going to continue to do renovations, and it's something that I'm going to get involved in as much as I possibly can. And I met some really great people over there, some really great veterans, and I'm just very excited to have an American Legion in Hoboken that I can go to. So if you're in Hoboken or even in the surrounding area, because that's another thing I didn't realize. Well, I guess I did, because I belong to another Legion of a town I don't live in. You don't have to live in Hoboken or even that close to join the Hoboken American Legion. So as soon as it opens, if you're interested, you should join. And I'm just excited because I think that's going to be something cool that I have like somewhere to hang out like that with a lot of veterans. And then finally, Kate, have you returned the coats?
No, and I'm going to put the pink one on as soon as the show's over because I'm chilly.
I just want you to know that the owner of that coat is none too pleased.
Well, I have no morals, so I don't care.
Sound the retreat.
Oh my God.